Welcome to the Irish Tech News Podcast, where we will bring you some of the most interesting interviews and features from the world of tech. Visit irishtechnews.ie and check out our podcast section to explore all of our previous episodes. You can subscribe to our podcast using whatever your favorite app or service is by visiting anchor.fm/irish-tech-news.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the ITN podcast with me, Gillian Gotzel. Now, today my guest is Anish Mohammed, who is the co-founder of Panther Protocol and CTO of Panther Protocol. Welcome indeed to the show, Anish.
Thank you very much and thank you for having me.
Oh, delighted. So we're going to do a crash course on privacy and cryptocurrencies, because people think, oh, cryptocurrencies, they're all for the dark web, the dark net and all the criminals. But privacy is a huge issue in this area in cryptocurrency. Where to begin, Anish? I'm not quite sure.
Okay, I think I should actually start with, bursting the myth that cryptocurrencies are used for, illegitimate purposes. So what I would say is quite trivial. It's like, why don't we do a normal comparison of a normal US dollar note? I have in my hand a US dollar note. And if you were to analyze this, you will find all the body fluids and a good number of drugs, okay? And if you do the same thing for BTC, which is Bitcoin, you'll find that only 0.5, less than 0.5% of transactions actually have anything that's what I could describe as funny, right? And this is publicly reported. Both Chain Analysis and Elliptic have actually done a lot of analysis, a lot of reports are publicly published. So, first off, that's kind of a bit of a myth. Myth being, put forward to just give some excuses. But why privacy is important? Let's walk through this very simply, right? Imagine the following, right? Imagine you had this wallet in your pocket, and as you walk along, everybody in the world is told, what you have in your wallet and what you're going to buy, right? So you could only imagine, all your transactions being known to everybody all the time. That's equivalent of what happens to you if you were to do, cryptocurrencies, right? So let's take a step further and let's imagine that we have central bank digital currencies being available to everybody. Now, imagine the following. Now you don't have a choice. The choice that you actually had until now, whether to go into cryptocurrency or not, disappears. The central bank digital currency means the central bank of your currency is offering you a currency, is a cryptocurrency, and all your transactions are going to be, well, public if they don't by default, provide privacy for you. So now you can imagine what is happening. And now let's walk through this and kind of understand the implications of this. So let's think about democratic structures, governance, right? If you know what I'm going to vote on, then the concept of democracy no longer is valid because my vote is not secret. And so the very fact that, that is being breached effectively means, that's a challenge. And everybody would remember what happened with Cambridge Analytica. So there you go. There's another example of it. Can you imagine the equivalent of that happening to your financial data? And that would be a very interesting scenario, right? So, to me, this is kind of the start of the story. It's the start of a slippery slope. So I will give you one more scenario so you kind of understand where I'm coming from. Imagine in countries where there are healthcare insurances, right? Imagine that your transaction data for everything you buy is available to the healthcare insurer. Imagine the state of your insurance. That is a complete lemon market. So this is why I think, we have a real challenge in not having financial privacy.
So financial privacy is a right. As you said at the first example, you don't want everybody to know what's in your wallet. You don't want to know what you're spending your money on.
Yep.
You can be a law-abiding citizen, pay your taxes, whatever you need to do, whatever jurisdiction you're in. But you don't want people, no more than you want somebody, if you're in the bathroom, you want to close the door. The bedroom, you close the door. It's the certain things that are unalienable rights that, and in your wallet is one of those things.
Yep.
Once you have done your duty by government and taxes and law, then how you spend your money is your own affair, and you don't want people to look at it, because it can also, not only is it an invasion of your privacy, but it can be used against you, as you say,
absolutely.
If you're insurance could be changed. The, you know, people could look at it and say, oh, you might be refused medical support because they see you're doing something that they don't approve of, let alone legal or otherwise. Okay, so financial privacy is really, really important. And in cryptocurrencies, transparency and the blockchain is one of the core tenets. So how do we get around that seemingly unpenetrable juxtaposition of ideas between open and transparent systems and privacy?
I think it's a balancing act. You can't actually have, I would say that there are two pillars that we need to understand. One is the pillar of authenticity, and another pillar is that of privacy, right? And you could almost consider them as both two sides of the coin. You might have to kind of think about what you want. And one of the magical things that has happened in the last 30 years or so is a thing called zero knowledge proofs. Zero knowledge proof systems is something that allows you to prove to somebody that you are telling the truth without revealing to them what it is.
It's kind of like so this, magic, isn't it?
It is definitely.
Zero knowledge proofs, it's yes. Just such a fantastic mathematical thing. It's magic. It is magic.
I think it's okay. I mean, what I would say is like, imagine you think of me in a room and the room just having one door. And then the zero knowledge proof in this instance could be that I say to you that I have the ability to escape from this room. And you come along with me to outside the room and you and I stand outside. And I'm the prover and you are the verifier. You let me inside the room and close the door behind me. And in like 2 minutes time, you see me outside. You know the fact that I have the ability to escape from the room, but you don't know how I did it. So that's the zero knowledge part of it, which is like, you don't know that how I did it, but you know I did it, right? And so you can actually prove something to somebody without losing your privacy. So in that sense, if you really have that fine balance where you can actually have authenticity while having privacy, you can prove things to somebody while not revealing what it is. It is going to be an interesting, start of a conversation. At the same time, you can actually have, preferential reveal, if that's required. What I mean by that is like, zero knowledge proof systems actually prove things to you, but it is possible that a certain regulator would like you to reveal certain things at certain points in time. And, it is possible that could be supported as well. And then, if you have both, then you should be able to achieve privacy to the degree you want while being able to kind of, explain yourself to the regulator in that sense. I think a lot of this regulatory stuff is like, bit overblown in that sense. So it's like I've actually worked 5 years in retail bank, almost 5 years in retail banking. And, I've actually gone through this whole process every year in looking at things and things of that sort. And I think some of it is like risk reduction by the parties, and some of it is like, truly regulatory. And in some sense, the kind of, political drive behind the parties in power kind of reflects on what their position towards privacy is and, what they would like to do towards regulation and, regulatory arbitrage that exists between different parts of the world. So it's like regulatory arbitrage essentially means if you go to Singapore or you go to some place like, countries where there are low taxes, and then you look at their regulatory requirement versus compare that to UK, that's the regulatory arbitrage. It's like you see the difference in how each of the different entities look at what you need to do and how they respond to it.
So how expensive is privacy? How, can you get, is it only available for people with a lot of money, or can you bring down the price so everybody can afford privacy?
So I believe we should actually think of privacy as, if I'm not mistaken, UN actually had like a bunch of human rights kind of definition. And one of the things that was being defined was privacy. So I think if we need to have privacy in that sense for everybody, we need to think about it slightly long-term and slightly differently. We need to think about privacy by default, not by choice. So in general, if you just use a normal website, you could actually see that you are being stripped of your privacy at the time that you access it, right? So that's the wrong paradigm. The Google of the world are actually, flipping the privacy model. They're not giving you any information that they have on you. None, right? Why do they want your information? What is it that, why is it that they want the information, right? Why can't they do, you know, to do a search, it doesn't necessarily require, you know, where I live, what browser I'm running, you know, what IP address is mine, what was the previous instance where I was in, or the one up before that. None of this is relevant. So why is it happening, right? This is a question that we need to ask. So it should be possible for us to actually have privacy in a, at a reasonable cost. I mean, as I would say, you know, privacy wouldn't actually, you know, happen at zero cost, because there's no such thing as free lunch. So there is an amount of effort that's required to actually enforce privacy in one sense of speaking, or provide mechanisms for privacy. So somehow we will have a cost for giving privacy, but at the same time, it doesn't have to be big. And that's the thesis we as Panther have.
So Panther Protocol, tell me a bit about how it gets around this problem. What technologies is it using?
Okay, so we are thinking about two things at the same time. I mean, actually three things, but two are the more important. And the third is like the market mechanism in that sense. First is the fact that we are going to use zero knowledge proof systems to actually prove that, you know, you know, you are somewhere, right? And the second is the fact that, you know, Roomba, I was telling you the proof about me being in a room and being able to escape, right? The zero knowledge proof for me being in the room is as good as you knowing that I'm in the room, right? But imagine that I'm in an auditorium full of 100,000 people. Then the fact that you have a proof that I am in a room of 100,000 people, you only have one in 100,000 chance of recognizing who I am, right? So, and now the other part that is there is like, how do you incentivize 100,000 people to join the crowd? Could be done two ways. One is like you incentivize people by giving them coupons of kind, by saying, you know, if you come in and stand in the auditorium for half an hour, we will give you so many coupons, right? Next time you want, you could either use it to get privacy, or you will just, you can use this coupon to buy ice cream, right? So that's one way of thinking about it. The third part is really pricing privacy, just understanding exactly what's the cost of privacy in the true market sense. So the arbitrage between the world there is no privacy and world there's privacy is understood. And then we could actually efficiently create mechanisms to, you know, deploy this capital to provide privacy so that, the price, you know, the price that's been actually set is very well within the axis of the largest set of population and the people who are actually, you know, standing up and turning up to be the volunteers in that auditorium gets compensated in a fair manner. This is the third and more important thing, I think, is in this Panther ecosystem.
What is the roadmap for Panther Protocol? Where are you now?
So we are, you know, having MVP kind of, we could see the MVP being delivered. I think like 30-40% of the MVP is kind of done. You know, other parts need to be done. Again, it's an MVP. You know, tomorrow there might be some changes, and you know, the 10%, 20% of what I said might just disappear, right? But the hope is by like, you know, end of June, July, we would actually have an MVP in the testnet. We already have a white paper, a light paper. A white paper is in a draft form now. In the next day or two, we would actually have that through the review process, and we will publish it. And then beyond that, in probably like, you know, around 6 months time, there will be more enhancements being published. And probably in less than a year's time, we intend to actually start working on an interchain index. So, for, you know, we already have an agreement with Flare to actually be one of the other first peer chains to be onboarded. So they offered us like 50 million tokens of theirs to actually build a bridge to their side. And we are expecting other major chains to actually offer us, you know, grants to actually build the bridges. So once these are onboarded, then it's a question of like how many bridges can we build, how many chains will connect it to our, you know, in the chain decks that has privacy, and, you know, it's as long as a piece of string. Like, but the plan is to actually have the protocol being managed by the DAO, and the DAO, which is being managed by the set of all token holders, and their voice and their decision would actually drive this decision making. Which chain should be in what order, what should be the pricing, you know, who should be the gatekeeper, should we remove the gatekeepers? So our expectation is, you know, we deliver as in the team that actually is delivering the protocol, delivers the protocol, and then hand over the governance to the DAO, and the global community will take ownership of the DAO and, you know, take after, look after its governance. That's what we are hoping to do.
Privacy for all.
Yes, that's the hope. Yeah,
that's cool. Well, thank you so much for your time today. And if people want to reach you, where's the best place to find you, Anish?
Oh, wow. That's, I mean, you can find me on Twitter. It's Anish Mohammed, no spaces. Otherwise, I guess, you know, Google would be...
Google is your friend.
Google is your friend. And like, I'm pretty sure you'll find me there.
Brilliant. Well, thank you indeed for your time today. It's been great chatting with you.
Thank you very much for your time. It's a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you for listening to the latest Irish Tech News podcast. Check back every day for the latest episode. You can follow us on Twitter at @Irish_TechNews, on Facebook, facebook.com/IrishTechNews, on LinkedIn, linkedin.com/company/Irish-Tech-News, on Instagram, instagram.com/IrishTechNews.ie, and on TikTok, tiktok.com/@IrishTechNews.